We're beginning a new series. We just finished a study in Psalm 37, and today I'm excited because we're going to begin a life study, something we haven't really done in Sunday school. We've done a lot of book studies, but now we're going to do a life study in the life of Moses. And I think there's so much good we can learn from Moses' life, and this is lesson one. So, perfect time to jump on board. Lesson number one, and it's God's perfect time and plan. God's perfect time and plan. And that's a wonderful thing to be a part of, isn't it? To be a part of God's perfect plan and God's perfect timing. It's when we put our plans in that things go messy. It's when we try to put in our timing and our plans. And a perfect example of that is Abraham and Sarah. They didn't want to wait for God's time and plan, and look what happens. Ishmael. We're still feeling the repercussions of that, aren't we? Alright? The Bible said he would be a wild man. And he still is. So the repercussions of that still today, because Abraham and Sarah wanted to interject their own time and plan. And it says the introduction, the life of Moses is an amazing story of God's perfect timing in working out His plans. His plans. And then it says there is much to be learned from the life of this great man of God and hero of the faith. We could safely call Moses a man of God, and we could safely call Moses a hero of the faith. We're going to be in Exodus chapter 2. So if you want to get it, Exodus chapter 2, that's where we will be. But you know what? If you put a little marker there, we're going to turn to Acts chapter 7. Acts chapter 7, which is Stephen's sermon, right before he was martyred. We are going to see a perfect historical background to Exodus chapter 2. This Acts chapter 7, I can't think of a better place to read just a few verses where it will get you the complete background of where we're going to pick up in Exodus chapter 2. So look at Acts chapter 7, and we start in verse 2. And you're going to see a summary of everything that's happened to Israel. Brother Emilio? Yes. The second blank was life. Now, if we look at Acts chapter 7, it starts in verse 2. He said, "Men, brethren, and fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father, Abraham, when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Haran. And he said unto him, Get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and come into the land which I will show thee. Then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans, and dwelt in Haran. And from there, and from thence, when his father was dead, he removed him into this land, wherein ye now dwell. And he gave him none inheritance in it, no, not so much as to set his foot on. Yet he promised that he would give it to him for a possession, and to his seed after him, when as yet he had no child. And God spake on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, and that they should bring them into bondage, and entreat them evil 400 years. And the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, said God, and after that shall they come forth and serve me in this place. And he gave them the covenant of circumcision. And so Abraham begat Isaac, and circumcised him the eighth day. And Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs. And the patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him, and delivered him out of all his afflictions, and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And he made him governor over Egypt and all his house. Now there came a dearth over all the land of Egypt and Canaan, and great affliction. And our fathers found no sustenance. Verse 12. But when Jacob heard that there was corn in Egypt, he sent out our fathers first. And at the second time, Joseph was made known to his brethren, and Joseph's kindred was made known unto Pharaoh. Then sent Joseph and called his father Jacob to him, and all his kindred, 75 souls. So Jacob went down into Egypt and died, he and our fathers, and were carried over into Sychem, and laid in the sepulchre that Abraham brought for the sum of money, that of the sons of Emor, the father of Sychem. Verse 17. But when the time of the promise drew nigh, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another king arose, which knew not Joseph. The same dealt subtly with our kindred, and evil entreated our fathers, so that they cast out their young children to the end they might not live, in which time Moses was born, and was exceeding fair, and nourished up in his father's house 3 months." That is the perfect background to what Exodus chapter 2 follows. Okay, how Israel ended up in Egypt in the first place, and how at a later time, Egypt became hostile towards the Israelites. So now we're in Exodus chapter 2. It says, in which time Moses was born. This is the time. Exodus chapter 1. See, since we're doing a life study, we're not necessarily going to touch every chapter of all these books. We'll hit some chapters of Exodus, we'll touch some chapters of Numbers, and we'll also touch some chapters of Deuteronomy. Those are the three books that we'll study. But we're not going to just cover every chapter. Exodus chapter 1, though, just so you know, is the chapter where the Pharaoh comes up with the plan of killing the baby boys. The Hebrew baby boys were to be thrown in the river. Because Pharaoh looked at the Israelites and said, there's too many of them. If we get into a war, they're going to rise up and join with our enemies, and they're going to defeat us. So that's why Pharaoh wanted to oppress them. He made them slaves, and he said, let's kill the baby boys. He was afraid of those young boys growing up and becoming strong men and soldiers who would later fight and attack. So this is the chapter, and number one, Roman numeral one on your handout, is God's perfect timing. We're going to see God's perfect timing in this chapter. Every little detail. God's perfect timing. And we start in verse 1. Very simply, there went a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi. We start with a good verse. You might say, what's so great about that verse? Well, you know what's great about that verse is letter A. God's blessing is upon the institution of marriage, which happens to be, according to the Bible, the joining of one man to one woman. It says in verse 1, there went a man of the house of Levi and took to him a wife of the daughter of Levi. All right. And it's a very simple verse, but you know, that's a great place to start, isn't it? Starting with a healthy marriage. We're going to be talking about the birth of a baby. We're going to be talking about a little boy. What better way to start that process than in the proper way in marriage? Instead of how the world does it. Have the children first, then get married, maybe. Right? That's how the world operates. And of course, all the other things that are going on, which we don't even need to mention, we know. But God's blessing is upon the institution of marriage. So we see there's a wonderful marriage here, and we find out their names later on in the book. Exodus chapter 6 tells us their names are Amram and Jochebed. But here's a couple, and we're going to learn some things about this couple. First of all, letter B also, parents just never know what God may have in store for any of their children. Letter B. I doubt that Amram and Jochebed, when they had this child, Moses, that they had any idea what God was going to do with him. They had no idea. They didn't know God was going to use this little child to become the deliverer. They didn't know all the details. You know, parents just never know. Every child is unique. Every child is a gift from God, right? And you just never know what God's going to do with that child. It's amazing what God can do. True. And you got to let God decide, right? The Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go. And when he's old, he will not depart from it. Every child is going to follow whatever God has planned for them, right? Now look at verse number 2. And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him for 3 months. So she hid this child. Why? Well, because Pharaoh's orders were to kill these baby boys. And I learned something about these parents from this, is letter C. That Amram and Jochebed did not allow the difficulties of their day to keep them from having the blessing of children. They didn't, this is an evil world, and I don't want to bring children into this evil world. That's just what we need. We need godly children who will grow up in this evil world and work for the Lord. If Christian families stop having children, we're in trouble, right? If Christian families stop having children because of fear, how about this one? Well, we don't want to have any kids because, you know, the economy is really bad. We don't want to have any children. Who's in control of providing for you and your family? And people are going to allow economics to determine whether or not they have children. I've heard people even tell us, my wife and I have 4 children. How do you feed them all? you know, when we already had two, and then we found out we were going to have a third one. And of course, even from Christians, the comments we get is, you know, how can you afford it? You know, you're having another kid? Well, then when number four was on the way, forget about it. Are you guys crazy? How are you going to afford those four kids? How are you going to feed those four kids in this world? And in New Jersey, how are you going to... Who's providing for us? All right, we're not going to let economics determine whether or not we're going to have children. All right? Brother Tony.
It wasn't my comment. Did you remember what I told you?
I wasn't thinking of you, so no, I don't remember. What did you say?
I walked up to you and I said, you need five more.
Five more. That's a baseball team. Praise the Lord. Amen. I don't know if we're going to go that far, but praise the Lord. You know, listen, Amram and Jochebed, they could have made excuses. Oh, man, we better not have any more kids because, you know, Pharaoh said they have faith. They have faith. They trusted God. They didn't allow economic difficulties. They were servants. They were slaves. Talk about economic difficulties. Okay? They didn't have prosperous jobs, Amram and Jochebed. And by the way, Moses was their third child. Miriam, they say, was already 15, and they say Aaron would have already been 3. And now they're having another one. See, they didn't allow those fears. Let's look at Hebrews 11:23. So we have to start with the faith of the parents before we even talk about Moses. It starts with the faith of the parents. Hebrews 11, verse 23. Notice, Hebrews 11:23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, and we're talking about the faith of the parents here, because Moses was only a newborn. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. You see, faith is the opposite of fear. Faith overcomes fear.
That's right.
They were not afraid of the king's commandment. What do you do when the government someday says, all right, well, you can't do this, you can't do that? Fear or faith? They had faith. Okay? They had faith. They did what was right. So now we go back to Exodus chapter 2 and verse 2. So we see they had to hide this baby. So you know one thing's for sure, they didn't have any baby showers for this baby. They didn't put balloons outside the tent when they found out this baby was born. They didn't have any birth announcements congratulating them. No, because this was all secret. So that's a tough way to start out, but they had to keep this baby hidden in Exodus chapter 2. And then finally, in verse 3, she couldn't hide him anymore. You know, 3 months old, and they start moving around, and they start getting louder and whatever, and, oh, we got to do something. This baby's starting to crawl around, and we can't keep him hidden anymore. So in verse 3, when she could no longer hide him, she took him an ark of bulrushes and daubed it with slime and with pitch and put the child therein, made a little basket that would float, and she laid it in the flags by the river's brink. And his sister, that would be Miriam, stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. So we see letter D, another testimony of their faith is letter D. It takes great faith to let go of that which is precious to us. That's the other step of faith. It takes great faith to let go of whatever's precious to you. They had to let go of this baby. Could no longer hide him. I think of the best example is in Genesis 22:2, where God said to Abraham, Abraham, take thine only son, Isaac. And God said, whom thou lovest, God said in that verse, and take him up to the mountain and offer him as an offering. Now you know the rest of the story. God's not a God of human sacrifice in that regard, no. We know God was just testing him, right? But it was a test to see if Abraham was willing to let go of that which was dearest to him. And I think often God puts us through a little test and says, oh, you like such and such, or you hold on to this or that. Would you be willing to let it go for me, is the question. Yes?
It was a test too. Showing Abraham what God was going to do with giving up his son.
That's right. Exactly right. Perfect illustration. And then, of course, how the ram was caught in the thicket. Yes, indeed. That was a beautiful picture of God giving up his son. So you see, it takes great faith to let go of that which is precious. And she had to let this baby go. I can no longer hold on to this. I can no longer hide this baby. I can no longer do... I have to give this to you, Lord. And that's what she does. She makes a little basket, she places the baby in the basket, and sends him down the river, sends Miriam to watch. Says, watch what happens. I want you to see where the baby ends up. Great faith of this mother, the faith of a mother. And in verse 5, now we begin to see how there are no, you know, this is all God's planning. Look at verse 5. And the daughter of Pharaoh, now the words aren't there, but you could think, just happened to come down to wash herself, right? As though this is going to happen by coincidence. No, this is God's plan. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the babe wept. And she had compassion on him, and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." And the woman took the child and nursed it. This is letter E. There are no coincidences in the life of a believer. There are no coincidences here. You talk about amazing things that happened. First of all, the ark floating, the little ark floating just to the right place. Okay? The baby being seen by Pharaoh's daughter. The fact that she saw it. I mean, it could have passed right by her. The fact that Pharaoh's daughter just happened to be washing there at the right time and place. How about the fact that Pharaoh's daughter found the child and not one of Pharaoh's soldiers? That would have been a different situation. And the fact that Pharaoh's daughter found the baby, because this is part of God's plan of where Moses is going to grow up. Perfect timing, perfect planning, no coincidences.
Besides the coincidences, you see God's protection too.
Absolutely.
Sure, an alligator.
Yeah. Sure. Anything could happen. That ark could have broken, or I mean, it's amazing how God had His hand. Connie, you had your hand up.
Yeah. She said that she may nurse the child to thee.
Right.
But then it says, and the maid went and called the child's mother. Did they see her?
I don't think that Pharaoh's daughter necessarily knew who the mother was, but Miriam did. And Miriam was the one that went and brought the baby. So Moses' older sister set it all up. All right?
Okay.
She was the one that was watching. Miriam. Yes, Brother John. Paid. And now she's getting paid to nurse the baby. And that is a blessing. And this is another thing you learn, is what, you know, often when you give up that thing that you think you can't give up, guess what? God brings it right back to you in a special way, in a better way. A better way. Let it go into God's hands. Amen. And it's so true how, you know, you can never outgive God. Alright? You can never outgive God. God's going to always bless you above and beyond. And now we go to verse 10. And the child grew. God blessed this child. He grew. And she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So there was a time where they had to give up the baby. He was then adopted into Pharaoh's home, and she called his name Moses, which means drawn out, because she said, because I drew him out of the water. So letter F, God was moving in the life of one baby to make preparations for the birth of a whole nation, and the fulfillment of many prophecies. You know, God promised Abraham, you will have this land, and your people will sojourn, and they'll be in bondage, he said, for 400 years, but then I will deliver them. This is all part of prophecy. So God was moving in the life of one baby. Isn't that amazing? The power of one life. The power of one, you know, every life matters. And you know, we talk about the life of a baby, and we live in a land that endorses things like abortion. And we're talking about the life of one baby. And we think of the millions that are aborted and the things that go on, how God values life and how every life matters.
It's amazing how God just sets everything up like gears on a wheel.
That's right.
His own mother nursed him.
That's right.
Everything just fell into place.
Perfect timing. And you know, it was a dark day, it was a difficult day, but that's just when God often works. You know, at the last moment, you know, things are tough and God works. So we see number one, God's perfect timing. Now number two, we're going to see man's impatient timing. This is where we see man getting into God's plan. Man's impatient timing. We're going to see that Moses He's a man of God. He's a hero of the faith. He's not perfect, though. He's not perfect. And if you look at verse 11, we see Moses is now a grown man. Age of 40. Okay? 40-year-old man in verse 11. And no doubt, he's been enjoying the luxuries of Egypt. He grew up in Pharaoh's court. I'm sure he was waited upon hand and foot. Had everything he could wish for. But yet, we see in verse 11, it came to pass in these days, those days when Moses was grown, that he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens. And he spied an Egyptian smiting an Hebrew, one of his brethren. Letter A, it is critical for us to know who we really are. Yes, Moses was an Egyptian. I mean, he grew up in Egypt. He knew the ins and outs of the Egyptian way of life. But we see from verse 11 that Moses never forgot who he really was. He knew still that he was a Hebrew. And at heart, he knew that those slaves were his people. He never forgot that. How many of us would be able to do that? You know, if we're living in a luxurious lifestyle and everything is great for us, and yet maybe some other folks that are of our family or whatever are struggling, but we kind of just distance ourselves from it because we're so comfortable in our own little circle. Moses could have easily just said, you know what, forget about it. You know, I'm going to just stay with Egypt. I'm just going to stay with Pharaoh's court. I mean, I have everything made here. He never forgot who he really was. I think it applies to us as Christians as well, that we never forget who we are as Christians. Too many Christians are comfortable in the world. Too many Christians are comfortable in the workplace where they think they're just one of the guys. All right, or one of the ladies where they just want to fit in with the world. Right? We know what the Bible says. Friendship with the world is enmity with God. We got to know where we fit in. We got to know who we really are. And Moses never forgot. And Moses had to make a decision. And just like we all do, letter B, we all make decisions about who we will identify with. We all make decisions about who we will identify with, don't we? Who do we want to identify with? We all make decisions about that, and we make it by our actions. Moses made a decision. Look at Hebrews 11. Back to Hebrews 11. And verse 24. Christians need to make up their minds about who they're going to identify with. Too many Christians want to identify with the world. They want to identify with whoever else, but when it comes to God's people, they don't want to identify with God's people. Try to hide the fact that they're a Christian. Hebrews 11:24, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, notice, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Moses wanted to identify with the Hebrews. Moses wanted to identify with God's people and the Lord. Moses said, I'm done with Egypt. He got tired of it. I'm done trying to fit in with Egypt. I'm a Hebrew. He knew who he was. It does us well to know who we are. I'm one of God's children. I'm a Christian. I don't want to identify with these people anymore. I'm not promoting a monkish lifestyle. Okay, we all are in the world, but not of it. Okay, but who do we identify with? You see, that's the issue. So Moses identified with the Lord. So back in Exodus chapter 2, Moses got the right idea. Okay, he's got the right desire. But here's where we see the method he chooses is not the right method. Oftentimes we have the right desires, we have the right motive, but the way we go about accomplishing it is not always right. We have to be careful. Look at what Moses does in verse 12. He looks this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. He killed him. Okay. This is an example of desiring to do the right thing, but doing it in the wrong way. Okay? Doing the thing in the wrong way. Look at letter C. There is a right way to bring about change rather than acting in passion. And what Moses is doing here is he desires to bring about change, which is great. He doesn't like what he sees, and that's good, because what he saw was wrong. He saw his Hebrew people in oppression. He saw his own brethren being whipped and beaten, and that's wrong, and he had the right, his heart was in the right place. This is wrong. We need to change this, and he was right. But the way he brought about the change or sought to was wrong. He commits murder. And that's a sin. He commits murder. I mean, I think sometimes we, because we love Moses so much, and we should, he's a great man, we read this passage and we kind of gloss over it. Oh, he just, got rid of a guy. No, listen, let's call it what it is. Moses committed murder. There's no sugarcoating this here. Moses committed murder. And we need to call it what it is. God's going to deal with Moses for this. God does not endorse murder. This is not the right way to go about this. So there is a right way. Let's look at James chapter 1. Moses is acting in passion. He is not acting in God's plan here, because we're going to learn that this was not God's time to deliver Israel yet. God will deliver Israel, but just not right now. God will deliver Israel, but just not right yet. Moses was ready, like, now. Moses says, alright, let's get this started now. I don't like what's going on. Look at James chapter 1, verse 19. James 1:19. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Verse 20. Look at verse 20. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. See? Moses is operating in passion. And Moses is operating in wrath. Moses is operating in maybe a desire for revenge. He saw that Egyptian smiting one of his Hebrews, so he acts in revenge and in return murders him. That's not how God works. God's going to work in a much better way in another 40 years, but not right then. So there is a right way to do things. We need to be careful. One thing to realize is God is not in a hurry. We are in a hurry all the time. All of us are in a hurry. We're in a hurry in our personal lives, aren't we? We're in a hurry to get from point A to point B to accomplish 1, 2, and 3. And Christians are in a hurry too, because a lot of times we want God's plan to unfold yesterday. Not in the future. We don't want to wait for God's plan to unfold. It's true of all of us. We all want to rush God's plan along. We all want to hurry things up. We don't like waiting. And Moses is very impatient. He's rushing. In letter D, we must wait on God's perfect timing to fulfill the plans He has for us. We must wait on God's timing, letter D, perfect timing to fulfill the plans He has for us. Listen, it may be God's will, but just not right now. It was God's will to deliver Israel out of Egypt, wasn't it? But just not right then. God had something else to do. There was time still to go. It's God's will to do things, but just maybe not right now. And Moses did not want to wait. He was in a hurry. Look at back in Acts chapter 7. Remember we read verses 1 through 20. Let's look at Acts 7:23. Talks a little bit more about Moses. Acts 7:23. Here we go. This is Moses. This is the heart of Moses. Verse 23. Acts 7:23. And when he, that is Moses, was a full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. So he woke up one day, whatever it was, I'm sure this was building up in his heart for many years, and finally it just reached a crescendo in his heart where he finally said, enough's enough. I've seen enough of my people suffer. I'm going to go visit them. I'm going to go do something about this. again, he has the right desire, but not necessarily going about it the right way. And he's determined. Look at verse 24. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him of him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. But look at verse 25. Look at what Moses thought would happen. He thought he was going to start a revolution. He thought he was going to start an uprising. You know, we're going to free everybody. We're going to revolt against Egypt. Verse 25, for he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them. But they understood not. Because now when we go back to Exodus chapter 2 and verse number 13, see, Moses in his mind is, this is the time. My people are going to see me as the great deliverer, and we're going to get out of Egypt, and we're going to leave this land. We've had enough of this. He, in his mind, this is it. This is God's will. Isn't it amazing how sometimes we come up with these plans? This was not God's plan yet. But in Moses' mind, this was God's plan. We're going to get out of here right now. So the next day, verse 13, he goes out the second day, Exodus 2:13. And two Hebrews are fighting together. And again, Moses, thinking he's the great leader already, he goes up to them and says, hey, whoa, why are you guys fighting here? And in verse 14, their answer to him, these are two Hebrews, their answer to Moses was, who made thee a prince and a judge over us? You've heard that saying. Who made you boss? Who told you you're the boss? They're not ready, because see, God's perfect timing wasn't yet. You see, in order, there's two things that have to happen here. God has to prepare Moses to be the leader, which he's going to do. And God has to prepare the people to receive his leadership. It's both ways. God prepares the leader and the people. Neither are ready yet. And they say, who made you a judge over us? You're going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian yesterday? Oh, Moses thought nobody saw. Moses thought it was being kept secret, but the word was spreading. The word was spreading quickly. And Moses now knows that the word is out. Verse 14, who made thee a prince and judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely the thing is known. And this is where we see God is going to deal with Moses. Moses acting in passion. Moses is impulsive, and God's going to get him out. Now we go to number 3. Lastly, Roman numeral 3, we'll do this quickly. God's patient timing. God's patient timing. We're going to quickly talk about God's patient timing. And God's patient timing is going to be to get Moses out of Egypt and into the desert. The quiet. I'm sure Egypt was hustle, bustle, city-like life, right? We all know about that. Our brother's experiencing that. Coming from New Mexico, right? And it's so different here. And the hustle bustle and the busyness of city life. But now it's time to get out to the country, Moses, where I'm going to work on you. Praise the Lord for the country. All right? You need that. So verse 15. Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian. And he sat down by a well. So letter A, it was God's time for Moses to leave Egypt for a while. It was time for Moses to leave Egypt. Now God's going to mold Moses into the man he needs to be. See, Moses thought he was ready. Moses was ready then, at the age of 40. Let's go. And God says, no, Moses, you're going to go out to the land of Midian. You're going to go out there, and I'm going to mold you for 40 more years. Whoa. 40 years of God's schooling in the wilderness. And that's letter B. God took Moses from the luxurious lifestyle of Egypt into his rough school of the desert. The rough school of the desert. A little bit of a tough time. You know, you could think of how Moses had everything going for him in Egypt, right? How he had the lap of luxury and everything was... that he was waited upon probably hand and foot. I mean, he grew up in Pharaoh's court. I'm sure he grew up experiencing the pleasures of Egypt. Now he's going to live in a desert where nobody's going to be waiting on him. He's going to be working. Hard work, okay? So he's going to take him out into the school of the desert, verse 16 through 21. Talk about that. For sake of time, you can read that. And he helps out the daughters of Zipporah, or the daughters of Zipporah is going to become his wife in verse 21. But he meets a priest. Out here, a priest of Midian, if you look at verse number 16. The priest of Midian has 7 daughters, and he helps them out, and he ends up getting married. And he ends up living with this family for the next 40 years, and he works as a shepherd. And that's letter C. God took Moses through the courses of parenting and shepherding. Probably two great courses for Moses. Talk about preparation for leading people. He's going to lead 2 million people out of Israel in the future. He better learn how to lead a few sheep first. And he better learn how to raise his own family first before he takes on the task of leading 2 million people out of Egypt. I think God is schooling him through the courses of parenting 101 and shepherding 102. This is the courses, you know. God didn't send Moses to a university somewhere. Moses already had the formal learning anyway. He already had that part down in Egypt. But now it's time for practical living learning, which is the best teacher, by the way. Practical living and actually experiencing life. That is one of the best teachers, and that's what he's going to learn. And you know, letter D, often it is the tough times of life which become the greatest times of preparation for God's future plans of your life. It's usually the tough times that become God's greatest time of preparation for your future plans. The desert was no vacation. Shepherding is no easy job. Hot, dirty job for many years. This was no retirement time for Moses. This was hard work. But Moses is, he's out there. And you know what he calls one of his son's names in verse 22. He has a son named Gershom, and he says, "For I have been a stranger in a strange land." And it really, Gershom means son of my banishment. And I believe Moses named him that because Moses at this time realizes, I'm here because of my mistake. I'm here because of what I did. I murdered somebody and I was impatient. Now look at where I have to go. You know, one bad decision can set you back many years, can it? God's timing though. God's working everything out. And that's where we get to letter E as we close. All the while, God was hearing the cries of His people. I mean, it had been 400 years. But God still heard the cries of the people, you see in verse 23. God heard their cries. And God's going to work in a special way. So, in closing, it says his own education was very incomplete. It would take at least 40 years to drain him of his self-will and self-reliance and make him a vessel fit for the master's use. God had to get Moses out of himself. God had to empty Moses. That's what it was. Moses was full of himself when he was 40. But now from age 40 to 80, there's going to be an emptying of Moses. Because next week, when we get to Exodus 3, and then God comes to Moses, and then God says, "Okay, Moses, now's the time for you to go deliver Egypt, or deliver Israel out of Egypt." Guess what Moses says? I can't, not me, I'm the wrong guy. So what happened? At age 40, Moses thought he was the greatest and thought it was going to happen. And then by the time he gets to age 80, God says, "Okay, now it's time." And now he doesn't want to do it. Because Moses finally got emptied of himself. Moses finally was humbled. And that's when God uses you. When you think you can't, that's when God does it. When you think you can, that's when God doesn't. See that? One of the great ironies of life, isn't it? So when Moses is emptied, next week, we'll see. Then God's going to call him. So let's close in prayer. I hope you're excited about these lessons. I am. And the life of Moses is going to be good for the weeks to come. So let's close in prayer. And we'll ask Brother Bob to close us in prayer.